and welcome to episode 36 of the DigiEat podcast. My name is Nicole Yates, and I am your host through this mess. Today, our guest is comedian and podcaster Kevin Anderson. Kevin's got a great podcast called Bleak and Review you should check out. It's a lot of fun. It's a little different. It is very funny. Before we get to it, I just want to say if you're looking to buy something for somebody for Christmas and you don't know what to get them, may I suggest Ha Ha Hot Sauce. Dave Yates makes an amazing hot sauce with the Carolina Reaper pepper. It's great on everything. And it's just fun to say Carolina Reaper pepper. He's also our sponsor for this podcast and a good friend of mine. So, and also a co-host of the 12 Questions podcast with Anna Valenzuela. So if you're interested to get in a bottle, HAHAHotsauce.com. HAHAHotsauce.com. Let's get into it and talk to Kevin.
Okay, I am here with a comedian and podcaster and man about town, Kevin Anderson.
Man stuck inside building, I believe, yeah, is what it would be called. But yes, I have been about town once upon a lifetime ago.
There you go. Yeah. Remember when we were allowed to be about town back in the day?
It was back in the day when the idea of congregating in a space with more than three people wasn't considered outlaw behavior.
Yeah, or terrifying.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like I've gotten used to this shit now. Like it's been 6 months now, and I feel like I can't even imagine doing the stuff that I used to do. Like, no, of course I get up and I'm in my apartment all day, and maybe I go to the store if I'm feeling crazy.
Oh yeah, I went to get the mail today, and it was like, hey.
Look at me living large, living free.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because like the mail's like 8 miles from my house through this giant apartment complex. So,
oh yeah, I don't miss that.
Yeah, yeah. For those of you at home, you don't know, I actually live in Kevin's old apartment. So
yes, with the longest, windingest hallways to get from the front door where you would get to the street where, you know, entry is allowed, and to get back to the apartment is like a David Bowie labyrinth situation.
It really is. It took me a solid week of living here to like feel comfortable that I was making the right turns.
Yeah, there's like three different parking garages and several two different buildings separated by a catwalk, which is always fun. Delivery people love that. They love being like, I'm at the back of the building and I don't see your units. Like, oh no, you have to go to the true back, which is deep into this fucking plot of land.
Oh, there was this nice old Armenian man who was making some kind of delivery, and I was just coming back up from getting the mail. It was like a food delivery, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, 321? And I was like, oh yeah, third floor. And he's like, okay. And then he just kind of got off the elevator with me and sort of wandered away and then wandered back. And I was like, follow me, I'll show you where it is. Yeah. Like, this guy's gonna die before he finds where this apartment is. Yeah,
in the middle of a goddamn heat wave, like trying to find that unsheltered, unforgiving walkway to get to the back unit.
Yeah, it was like two medium pizzas and like a salad. I'm like, oh
God. Can you imagine getting a salad delivered during the heat wave? It just arrives and it's all just fucking hot and messy.
Ugh, like wilty and gross.
No thanks.
So Kevin, so you've been living in LA for how long now?
About 7 years and 6 months. So 7.5 years.
Cool, cool. So you moved here from the Sacramento area.
Yeah, I was Sacramento, born and raised. Then I lived in the Bay Area, San Jose, for about 4.5 years. And then after I graduated from San Jose State, my parents, at the time I had two of them. so my parents, they were like, all right, we'll give you 1 month to move back in and figure out what you're doing. We don't care where you go, where you end up, but you can only stay here for a month after you graduate and, you know, get a job in Sacramento, go to San Francisco, go to LA, like you're talking about, whatever it is, but you get 1 month. And so I was like, well, I guess I'll go to LA then. And so that was kind of the kick in the ass I needed to like actually make the big move, quote unquote.
Wow. One whole month.
Yeah. One whole month, February to March. And then March 3rd, I moved into the shadiest place I've ever lived in my life. In East Los Angeles.
Wow. Wow. Well, that was very heartwarming of them to give you a whole month to figure your life out.
I mean, they were right to do it that way, though, because they know how I work, which is that unless my feet are to the fire or someone's like lighting a fire under said feet, I won't do shit. I'll just procrastinate and come up with excuses for why I can't. So they're like, well, no, we're going to kick you out in a month. So you know, do something. And then they kind of, you know, just sit back, arms crossed.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. Okay.
Well, they were stern, but fair. I mean, my dad's dead now, so I get less of that, but like, that was mostly his vibe.
Oh, welcome to the Dead Dad Club.
Oh, Dead Dad Club. Pew, 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 pew.
I actually have a shirt that says Dead Dad Club on it.
Really? I should get one of those.
Oh, I'll find the link for you.
Yeah, I'm making a lot of insane purchases in quarantine, and I think that could definitely be one of them. Like, I bought a face mask that says birds don't exist. I'm currently wearing a shirt that says beef diaper on it. Like, nice. I'm a big dumb idiot, and quarantine is strengthening that, I think.
Oh, I think it's making all of us big dumb idiots, big dumb sweaty idiots, and there's nothing really we can do about it except roll with it and see where it goes.
True. Yeah, we're finding a lot of bottoms we didn't know were there.
yeah, bottoms under bottoms under bottoms.
Meta bottoms.
Yeah, which is actually the name of a gay bar in West Hollywood.
Whoa, bottoms under bottoms. I've heard of shorties watching shorties, but bottoms under bottoms. It's fun.
So you're from like the Sacramento area. So like what, I don't know anything about that area except the Kings.
Yeah, you know, our shitty basketball team, and we had one good era where, you know, when Vlade Divac was on the team, and we had Chris Webber and Mike Bibby, we had all the good boys. Like I say, there's not really much to know about it. It's very, I equate it to a lot of my friends in LA that I know who are from the South. Uh-huh. And we, like, when I hear about how they talk about, like, their lives growing up in, like, Alabama or Georgia or Atlanta or whatever, I'm like, that's very similar to where I grew up. It's just, I grew up in Northern California, which is somehow the South of California, if that makes sense.
Oh, huh.
It's like a lot of like, oh, it's hot, let's go to the lake and get drunk on the lake, you know, or get drunk by the river and float around in inner tubes, like redneck shit, like trash shit. Like it's definitely, I mean, the outskirts of Sacramento are very Southern living in that regard, I think.
I mean, that doesn't sound too bad to me. I mean, I grew up in a city where it was like, it's hot out, let's just sit in the air conditioning, or it's hot out, let's go break into the pool at the rec center up the street, or it's hot out, let's turn on the fire hydrant.
Or it's hot out, let's go throw batteries at somebody.
I mean,
I know that's it. yeah, if they deserve it.
Honestly, the only people that we've thrown batteries at, it was J.D. Drew.
Oh, I know. That's like the only Philly reference I know, which is why I brought it up.
I mean, he had it coming. If a team wants to draft you and then you have an attitude like you're too good to go play that team, like you deserve the ire of the fans.
Dan DePriel talked about that at length on my podcast, actually. I don't know if you know Dan. He's from Philly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. It's great. Yeah,
shout out to Dan DePriel.
What up? I'm surprised you picked the battery thing. Usually it's the snowballs at Santa Claus thing that I hear a lot.
Right. I just assumed that those snowballs were packed around batteries.
People have said that to me. And I was just like, I don't think batteries existed at that point. It was like 50 years ago. And they were like, oh.
We didn't have batteries 50 years ago.
Yeah.
We were using those clay pots from Iraq that we found. Those first batteries with the wires in them and shit, the copper wires.
That, you know, everything ran on vacuum tubes. You know?
Yes, absolutely.
But I mean, do you know the story behind the snowballs?
I know the highlights, but I could definitely know more.
Well, basically what happened was this. The Eagles were having a horrifically bad season, and the owner sucked, and it was the end of the season, and I think it might have been the last game of the season, and it snowed, and they did not like clear the stands.
Right.
So the fans were pissed off, you know. It's cold. The season sucked. The stadium is full of snow, right? The Eagles are getting their asses beat. And it's halftime, and they were supposed to have Santa Claus. Well, the guy that they hired to play Santa Claus, like, either did show up or he was drunk or something.
Probably.
I think it was that he didn't show up. So they were like, oh, shit. So they pulled a guy out of the stands who was drunk, didn't fit the costume, and just they put him out there, and everybody was just so mad and cold and pissed off that they left all that snow in the stands, so they just started throwing snowballs.
They're like, let us launch a barrage at the universal symbol of holiday good cheer.
Yeah, well, I think he was a shitty Santa to begin with.
Oh, I'm sure he was.
You know,
was he pulled out of the stands, or was he did he volunteer as tribute?
Maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah, I feel like he was probably like, I can fucking be Santa. I'll be fucking Santa. Like, he probably had some of that energy.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, because, you know, the colder it is. Well, I mean, being from California, you don't have that much experience with, like, cold weather.
Yeah.
But, like, when it's, like, super, super cold and you're drinking, that's the only thing that's keeping you from dying.
No, totally. Absolutely. Yeah, I've experienced that kind of cold in my life, but I've never lived in it and, like, had to deal with it every year of my life, you know, for a certain section of the year. So I can only imagine that that'll catch up to you eventually.
Yeah. If you wonder why the people on the East Coast are, like, angry.
Yeah.
Because of the winter.
It's kind of like, yeah, they're mad because of the weather, whereas on the West Coast, we're mad because nobody wants to pick up our pilot. Like, that's the disconnect. Everyone on both coasts is fucking furious, but, you know, some of it's really, really egotistical, and the rest of it's just the elements.
Yeah. It's so funny. Like, when I first moved out here, I moved out here, like, over Martin Luther King holiday in January, and 2 years ago, this past January.
Yeah.
And I'm like, year three now. So when I first moved out here, it was like, it was a cold, rainy season, you know, where it's like 62 and rainy.
Yeah. Which is frigid. I know.
Right. So I get here and I'm just like, fucking January 62. I'm walking around in shorts, and my landlord and my new roommate were like just bitching about how cold it was. And she's wrapped around a blanket and he's just like, you know, wearing a coat, and I'm like laughing at them, and they're like, oh, you wait, you'll acclimate, you'll see. And I was like, never, 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 never. And don't you know, like, the next January, I'm like, why is it so cold?
Well, it was an interesting thing, because, like, going back to, like, Sacramento and stuff is, like, since I've been here 7.5 years, I'm totally used to it, but Sacramento during the summer is even more brutal than LA. Like,
really?
I'm from a place that's a lot hotter, and, like, literally, like this last heat wave we just had, it was like in the, like, one, it was like 111 there. It was like 112 and 11. It was like crazy. And, like, it was pretty bad in LA too. But, like, I came down to, like, be in LA, and I was like, oh, it's the desert. Like, I got to be careful, cause, you know, I don't want to be dehydrated. I got here, I was like, oh, this is, like, nice. This is breezy. It's not just this punishing dry heat that I'm just used to, like, all the time. Oh, and man. So I guess we had different culture shock when we arrived here for that reason.
Yeah.
But, like, in Sacramento, like, it gets so hot in the summer, because I was a little skate rat growing up. So, like, all we would do during, like, the chillier seasons is skate. And then when it would become blisteringly hot, we would just go to the river and jump off cliffs, because when you live in a weird outskirts town like that, you just dare God to kill you recreationally in the heat, because it's so hot. You're just like, fuck it. Wow. Yeah, it was a weird life.
Wow. I think if that was me, I probably just would never leave the house.
That's also an option. I did play a lot of video games too. That's true. But yeah, like, it was weird how, like, the skateboarding friends I made also became the friends that I would go and like dive off of bridges with. It's like, all we would do together is try to get hurt.
Yeah. What is it with jumping off of things?
I don't know. I think Jackass was really popular around then. And, and so there was a little bit of Jackass energy going on throughout that. And then it was just like, it's just a thing you do in Sacramento. Like, there's, you talk to anybody from NorCal, if you ask them if they've heard of a Rainbow Bridge, Big Tit, I know it's a big rock that people call Big Tit because it kind of looks like a nipple and everyone's a psychopath. and the China Wall and all these places, they're like, these are like actual, like, landmarks for Sacramento. It's like, oh yeah, I know that. We used to go when I was a kid, we would go there and, you know, have a cooler full of beer and someone would be brave enough to jump off. And then, you know, maybe they'd see some titties or something. Like, it's trash. It's all garbage. this is where I come from.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Nice.
But we were nerds about it though. You know, we weren't like bro-y about it. We weren't the Fox Racing hat wearing guys. We were like the ones that were like, oh, we actually know the right way to do this so you don't get hurt, and the best way to enter the water so you don't slap your arms and get wounded. We're not a bunch of drunk fools. We respect the cliffs.
Oh, well, as long as you're respecting the cliffs, yes, then all is good then. Okay.
There God's go. Creation.
Well, every once in a while in Philly, like, Philly has two rivers, the Delaware and the Schuylkill. Mm. And neither one of those rivers you want to swim in.
So I've heard.
Well, the Delaware is, my mom used to kind of work for a company that dealt with that, is the cleanest that it's ever been. But, like, it is a huge river with a ridiculous shipping lane and a riptide.
Oh, so, word.
Like, you don't want to go in there. You will die.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, every other year or so, there's some dumb kids that, like, jump off a bunch of rocks into the Schuylkill.
Yep.
And they die.
Yep.
Every year.
We had... We had, I mean, that happens. That happened on all these spots too. Like, and it was mostly from some of these things were things you'd have to like run and jump because they were slanted cliffs. Like, so you couldn't just stand and jump. You'd have to have momentum to make it, you know, like you're jumping over a gap instead of just a drop. And they put up a fence in front of the one that everyone would call China Wall, which is about a 58-foot cliff. And the fence covered most of it, but they left a big chunk of the wall that you could still run and jump off to the right of the fence with no fence. And people just jumped from there over and over, like for years, nobody fixed it. And I was actually there once. I've told this story on other shows before, certainly, but this is one of my better stories. I was there once with my skateboarding friends and then some of their friends that I didn't really know who were there to just get drunk off of like grain alcohol and like be by the water, you know. And we're all there sober, like we respect the cliffs, you know, all that shit. And we're sitting there looking at the cliff from the place you're supposed to jump. It's like, yeah, this is how it goes. This is what people do. Unbeknownst to us, some incredibly drunk man wearing sandals kind of just waltzes up to the edge and tries to jump and doesn't make it and fractures his spine. And we go, did he make it? And we look over the edge and then we just see him float up face down. And I go, oh shit, he didn't make it. And we like, you know, panic for a second. And then I was like, okay, well, I've done this a million times, so I'm going to jump in and get him. And so I jumped and I landed and he's like, I was probably 18 or 19 at the time. And I was like a cool 175 pounds. And this dude was like, had a foot on me and was probably like in like the 250 to 275. So I was like drowning, trying to get him out of the water. I was like screaming. I was like, other people jump in, please. and so like, we eventually got him out and like Coast Guard or whatever you call it, not Coast Guard, but whatever water police was there came and, you know, eventually got this guy to a hospital and he ended up having to get several discs in his spine fused together to keep it intact. And I had just met that guy this day. And then I see him 1 year later at a shitty little rock club called the Boardwalk in Orangevale, California, home of a bunch of neo-Nazis and terrible people. I see this guy at the Boardwalk a year after I dragged his fucking drunk ass out of the water with a fractured spine. And he goes, dude, you fucking saved my life last year. Let me buy you a drink. What do you want? And I was like, still underage, but like definitely going to take a drink. I was like, Sierra Nevada. And then he goes, cool, man, I'll get that. And he goes off to the bar. And then my friend just looks at me and goes, you're going to order the most expensive beer? Wow, that's a dick move, Kevin. I was like, wow, $6? Oh, no.
Wow, yeah. Your effort was not worth $6.
Yeah, that's the high-end beer at the Boardwalk at Orangevale is a Sierra Nevada. It's like you couldn't have gone with a PBR or a Bud Light, you fucking bougie twat. Like, what the fuck? I can't even remember what band we were seeing, but holy shit. It was just so weird. It was so weird that, like, I got shamed for asking for a kind of good beer after literally dragging this man out of the death depths he was about to sink into.
Good Lord. That's craziness.
I think that is the best story to sum up my upbringing. That is Sacramento in a nutshell.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So you went from Sacramento to LA then?
Sacramento, San Jose, and then LA. Okay. San Jose was just basically for school. So my whole experience with living in San Jose was just like college shit, pretty much. Uh-huh. Smoking a lot of weed, drinking a ton of Sailor Jerry's, dropping acid, botching relationships hard, growing weed on the roof of the house we lived in. Like, you know, the typical stuff.
That's fair.
Yeah. And then LA. And then LA after that.
Oh, man. And so you started doing stand-up in LA?
I did a few open mics in my last like year of college because I started like listening to podcasts and realizing like I'd been a stand-up fan forever, but I started like hearing my favorite comedians talk about their lives, specifically in LA as comedians. And I was like, wait, this kind of seems like a community I might want to thrive in. Like, it seems like very relatable to me. Mm-hmm. So I started playing around with the idea of doing stand-up because it just never even occurred to me that that's a thing I could try. Even though, like, you know, it's one of those things where people your whole life are like, oh, you should be a comedian when you grow up. You're funny. I'm like, yeah, but nobody does that. Like, you know, and then it's like, whatever. So I tried and bombed a bunch at some local San Jose open mics. And then I was like, even though I was bombing horribly and had no sense of what my comedic voice was, and I was basically just like ripping off Doug Stanhope and Mark Maron and all these fucking white guys. I was like, well, I still just want to keep doing this. So I'm pretty sure. And I was like also in school for screenwriting and stuff. So like I had it in my head that I wanted to do like entertainment stuff. And that's when stand-up started to become like a thing of like, oh, this could be a something that facilitates other artistic things. And like, I think LA is the place to go for it. So I basically did like 4 open mics in San Jose over the course of a year, and then just moved to LA and just started going all the time and just like trying to, and just bombing for like a year still, like just bombing, just right. constantly, like not knowing what the fuck to do. And like, but just being, no, I just got to keep doing it. And then, you know, eventually figuring out what the fuck stand-up is coming from my dumb brain.
Well, I think everybody kind of does that. I mean, nobody starts stand-up like knowing what they're doing and having a voice. And I mean, it takes
that's
a while.
True. There are those motherfuckers though, like my friend Radiston, who they like somehow crush their first time and they get all confident and then they bomb really hard for like a long time after. But that whenever I hear that, I'm like, how did you manage to do well the first time? I don't even remember my first time on stage because I was so fucking nervous and weird. Like, I think I blacked it out of my brain.
I feel like most people blacked out the first time. I think everybody blacks out the first time because it's just too much. It's too much for your brain to process.
Yeah. You're overanalyzing. If you're like me, you've overwritten your material where you're like, I'm going to write out exactly what I'm going to say instead of like trying to like write talking points and, you know, go with the flow there. Like, it's like you're thinking about how long will this take exactly? Cause I know I have 5 minutes. So hopefully this will be about 4:45. And then like, it's just like, once you can let go of a lot of that shit, it makes stand up a lot easier.
Well, I think, you know, as it's funny how like, as you progress, you sort of have like an internal timer and like, totally. You just kind of know like, all right, that's been about 2.5 minutes. I got 3 minutes here. I'm done.
That's very true. I remember the first time I really noticed that I had an internal timer was I was co-producing this trash show. I mean, it was fun while it lasted, but it became a shit show in Long Beach, like my first year and a half of comedy. I don't know how I kind of fell into this with a coworker of mine at my day job at the time who also was into comedy. And he was hosting the show and I was supposed to do 10 minutes. And he got like wasted. It was just hitting on some girl at the bar, I think, and didn't like me. I did 25 minutes and I was supposed to do 10. And I knew when it had been 10 minutes. And I was like, Bobby, no? All right, I guess we're still going. and it was the loosest run show ever. It was a nightmare. The only reason we got to do it as much as we did because we invited the whole office to every show. It's like, hey, 2 of your coworkers are running a show. It was a nightmare, but I do remember that was the first time that I was like, it's been 10 minutes. Why is this still happening?
Yeah, that is one thing I do not enjoy about shows is when somebody's just like totally blowing the light and just like not giving a fuck.
As a showrunner, I know you've run several shows, so you probably know exactly, but like the worst things are if someone's blowing the light and they don't give a shit, or if somebody just abruptly bails on their time without telling you.
Oh yeah.
Because then you're like trying to do your showrunner shit and then you just hear like they're applauding like the person just got off stage. You're like, you had 4 more minutes, what the fuck, I gotta run out there right now. That happens all the time at open mics for sure, but at shows it's a nightmare.
My number one, I have 2 things that I hate that people do at a show. One is when they shit on the room on stage.
Oh, sure.
That drives me crazy. And when they're trying new shit and they just totally bail on it and just get angry.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
Mine is when they literally shit on stage. That's when I get really mad as a showrunner. When they're like, all right, for my next bit, here's an actual turd coming out of my butthole. That's the biggest bummer for me. And it happens so much in LA, especially in Valley comedy.
Now, for those of you at home who don't know Kevin is one of 2 lovely gentlemen who run the open mic at the Other Door in North Hollywood.
Yes.
And, the other lovely gentleman being Joe Kay.
Yes, Joe Kay and I ran that for about almost 4 years, I think. I think it was 4 years in motherfucking May. Holy shit. I think we're done with it now, but we did do it for 4 years. So I think it's over. I think the pandemic has effectively killed the goodwill I can expend towards doing an open mic anymore, because I'd be lying if I said that last year of me doing a killer mic wasn't taking its toll on me mentally and physically. Because it's a long mic. I put up a lot of comics and Joe and I would get stressed out more than we'd have a good time there. And I was just always fucking getting drunk as shit to deal with that.
Well, What I don't understand is why you went so long. I mean, the mic ran for like 6 hours.
Like, yeah, we used to go 6 hours. That's true. We'd stop doing that. We started going 8 to midnight was the goal. And that's kind of the format we inherited with it when we were, when we did take over the room. And it was kind of like, yeah, cool, we could do this. And at the time we had more people helping us with it, like with Late List and stuff. But at where it's at now, or where it was at before quarantine, was like, we only get paid based on how many people show up to that. Like, we don't make a flat rate or anything. It's 10% of what the bar makes. So it's like, okay, the more comics that we can put up, you know, hopefully most of them are at least buying a fucking soda or something. Right. So it actually did behoove us to run longer. And that's when it started becoming the thing of like, okay, even when we're running longer and making a little more money, I'm still drinking to excess and going over my drink like comps. That we get 6 comps and I would blow through those all the time. Like, I give way more than 6. And I'd be like, I'm not making any money on this, and it's not making me like comedy anymore, I feel like. And the fucked up thing is, like, that's how I met so many people in the scene, is through that mic, because so many people knew about it and would come through. I'm pretty sure that's how I met you.
Yeah.
And that's how I met almost everybody. And I will miss that, but I also don't think that when I'm allowed to be creative again, the first thing I want to do is go back into an open mic.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And you know what, honestly, like, I feel like if you run an open mic, like, your run is about 2 years before you start to want to kill yourself.
Yes. You have to get new blood in there to keep the room. That's what happened with us. That's why we started doing it. And I think I would love it if that room kept going, and they could change the format however they want, whoever ends up hosting it. I think The Other Door is a great bar, and it's awesome, and it's my favorite local, but I don't know if I can do it anymore. And Joe actually feels the same way. We talked about this recently. We were like, nah, we should probably not.
No, the mic that I went to in Philly was the first time I did stand up. Laughs on Fairmount at this place called Urban Saloon. Uh-huh. And it was great. It was a room like just like at The Other Door, like it's a separate room in the back.
Beautiful. You know?
And it was great. And it was run by Mary Rosinski and Carolyn Busa. They're two comics. Carolyn's in New York now, Mary's in Philly. So 3 years. Well, I think they ran it for like 2-3 years, almost 3 years.
Yeah.
And finally Mary was like, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
This is every Monday night.
Yeah.
I can't do it anymore. So like she stepped back, and then Carolyn kind of like did it for like a little bit with these other guys. And then she was like, fuck this, I'm done. And I'm moving to New York, and she left.
Yeah.
And then these other guys ran it, and it was fine. And then the people who owned the bar sold it.
And oh, shit.
And she sold it to these bros. And the guys ran the mic for a couple of weeks, and then they came in and they were like, we don't want to do this anymore. And they were like, what? Why? And I always thought that was a crazy, crazy move on their part, because there's no TVs back there.
Right.
And just like a little bar. So like, when there's not like Monday,
there's nothing, no one would go back there.
Nobody would come into that bar on a Monday for anything.
Yeah.
Unless there were sports on. And in the wintertime, there's that, or not in the winter, like, you know, in the spring, and then with the weird layoff of sports seasons and stuff like that, especially when Monday Night Football is over, people don't go out on Mondays.
Right.
Monday is not a day to go out to go boozing. So it was bringing in all of these comics, and then we would get a pretty decent crowd. But they were just like, nah.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's interesting when a bar, like, when they cut something like that, that is clearly just only net positive. Because I don't know what they were paying the host, but I'm sure it wasn't a lot. Like, no one ever gets paid for comedy. Unless you're one of six
I think they
people
got,
on
like,
Netflix.
I think they got a couple of comped meals.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the fucked up thing about, it doesn't shock me that it happens in Philly too, but like in LA especially, it's like, the supply and demand of stand-up is so fucking askew, where it's like literally you're begging places to let you bring in business for them, and you get nothing out of it other than a space to host your show or mic.
Yep.
It's kind of toxic. It's kind of like, could we please come into your bar free of charge? We won't ask for anything. We swear. Maybe if we could get like maybe some nachos, if that's okay, but like, we just want to bring in a bunch of business for you. And, you know, maybe alienate some of your customers with bad comedy, but not on slow days, on slow days. We're not going to ruin your Friday, your Saturday. We want to come in on a Wednesday and we want to try to help you out, but no, you don't have to pay us. I'm doing this for exposure. Like, what the fuck is that? Like, we need to unionize.
We're just crazy people. And I think like, as you get further in and you realize all that stuff sucks, but you always have those new people coming up who are like 6 months in,
willing to be a part of that. Yeah.
Willing to be like a cog in a machine, willing to just, you know,
the bringer era. It's when you're at the experiencing comedy where somebody's like, hey, I'll let you do 5 minutes on my show at the Comedy Store in the belly room. If you can bring all of your coworkers and the people that still believe in you, you know, they won't come. You'll get diminishing returns, so you only get to do a couple of these with me. But this one show will make you feel very important, and you're like, "Yes, Daddy, please. Oh, yes, put me on show, Daddy. I will make everybody in my office come. I will buy their tickets. I know comics that buy tickets for people to come see them. They actively, well, they don't do this regularly, but I've like heard of this happening." It's like, oh yeah, I bought a pack of discounted tickets to Flappers, fucking quasi-club Flappers, and I distributed them to all my coworkers in an attempt to have people watch me do art. That's despicable.
there's so many things wrong with that.
That's the same era.
And by the way, yeah. Flappers, the community college of comedy clubs.
Yes, 100%, yes. Yeah. Flappers is the communications degree at a community college of stand-up comedy.
Yeah, it is. I like the Yoohoo room. I actually hate that big room.
That room is set up really weird, especially if it's not full. It's very wide and confusing. And I don't like the old style of comedy club. Like I think the Improv is a cool club. And like the Comedy Store, while it is full of rapists and gatekeepers, it's like, yeah, you know, it's a great, it's got its, you know, historical significance. But I just love the settings of indie rooms more. Like I like doing like black box theaters that are like full, like you get like 50 people in a packed house in like a black box theater.
Yeah.
And like everyone's drinking out of like a fucking big tub of beer that the host brought or whatever, instead of like getting a check drop from a waiter that's going to like interrupt the flow of your set. It's like, it's just a better vibe for stand-up, I think. And I think I think quarantine might end up effectively reducing the significance of the old way of absorbing stand-up. And I think it's going to be a lot more independent. I don't know. That's what I picture.
I definitely see that coming, because I don't understand how these places can stay open. The Helium in Philly I always felt was set up perfectly.
Yes, the Helium has got a great reputation.
Yeah, I mean, I have my own issues with Helium, but the room in Philly is great. It's that old style, you know, like the Improv.
Sure.
But the stage is lower. Like, it's not like at Flappers, you're like 8 feet above everybody.
Yeah.
Above them and
towering over them, like, listen to my jokes about Tinder, mortals, and be afraid.
I will step on your chicken fingers.
Yeah. If you do not laugh at my joke, I will spit upon your flappy tots. There were $9.
I don't know. There's something about Helium. It's set up perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
there's clubs that get it right for sure. Yeah.
Oh, actually, did you know that Todd Glass actually helped design that room?
Oh, I've heard Todd Glass extensively talk about how he designed that room on many podcasts.
Okay.
If there's one thing I'm very familiar with, it's Todd Glass talking about the lighting of comedy clubs and how they work. I'm a big Todd Glass stan, so yeah, I know about that lore for sure.
Yeah, he's all about the tea lights. To have the tea lights.
What if I was the guy that came in and was you be the guy, you be the club owner that doesn't get it, and I'll be the guy that gets it. I'll come in and I'll talk about how the lights need to be lower, and you need to put him in the fucking dark. You put him in the dark, and then they're not scared to fucking laugh.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
It's all shit that makes sense that like you don't even think about, and then when he says it, you're like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I mean, and I've done rooms that are insanely like the lighting gradient has gone everywhere. I've done shows like in what I feels like in pitch darkness, and I've done shows that feel like I've done outdoor daytime shows on like wine patios, you know, like, right. So I've run the gamut, and goddamn, if there's not a more uncomfortable time than when you could just see everybody clear as day while you're telling jokes. It's not, yeah. It doesn't, nobody wants that.
No.
it's too, you need to have some kind of separation, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and I hear you about the indie rooms and the black box theaters. At Philly Improv Theater, they used to have this, what they call the second stage. And it was a hold like maybe, I don't know, 60 people, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, perfect. And black box thing, great green room. I had my best sets in there. Just so much fun. You could very vaguely just see people. Just like maybe people in the first row, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and that was it.
That was that was the show where I ran my show for a little bit at this definitely not handicap accessible theater. Shout out to Skip Town Playhouse. They were very,
Skip Town.
Yeah. They're all very cool people, but like it was, you know, it was 34 seats. It was 34 seats and it was a very deep room, meaning that like the seats would go up quickly and into the darkness. Mm-hmm. So it was all very intimate. And like when I had Todd Glass there, it was all full. And he was like, see, they get it. You know, that thing. It's like, lighting wise, that was a room that was perfect for that. Now it was poorly ventilated and everybody, we almost killed Eddie Pepitone because you couldn't breathe in there if it was August, but
wow.
It is the exact, it's like a very good environment for an hour and a half long stand-up show or whatever it is. It's like, you feel very connected to everything. I think the other thing a comedy show needs is the ability to get to the bathroom or go order a drink without walking in front of everybody. You know, yeah, what I mean? Without totally disrupting everybody. That's like, I feel like that's one thing that definitely can fuck up the black box show for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You don't want somebody just walking like right across.
Yeah.
Coming
down the stairs and then walking effectively just like becoming a giant wall between the performer and the audience for like a good 3 seconds. And you're just like, well, everyone has to notice this.
Yeah.
you can't get around it.
Yeah. Not a fan of that. It's, and I don't care if they make you hug the wall. Like, right. You're still going to see you. I can still see you.
Yeah. I know you've probably been, you know this already, but at Skip Town, the only way to get to the bathroom during the show is to walk up next to the stage. So you're almost parallel to the performer and then open a curtain and then squeeze your way down a narrow, dimly lit hallway that isn't really a hallway between like the props, like wall of the stage and the wall of the actual building. And it's like to get to the green room, because the only other way is across the stage and you can't just walk across the stage. So I've seen people like literally just like holding in piss for an entire show just to not have to deal with that uncomfortable fucking aspect, or go outside and piss in the alley. Oh, it's like, man, your only two options.
Not an option for me. Thanks.
No, certainly not. You gotta get one of them. What do they call them? The things that are
the P-funnel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Anna's got one of those. She's like, if you're going to be on the road a lot, you need to get yourself a pee funnel. And I'm like, all right.
It's like you're gonna find yourself in some compromising situations where you're going to need to let a whole bunch of urine dump out. And
yeah, I've never been good peeing outside, so it should be.
Yeah. Bless.
So I want to talk a little bit about this this Facebook group. Show me your
stuff. Oh, okay, sure. Yeah.
And how you politicize, and I love it. You politicize the Show Me Your Sandwiches group.
Yes. It wasn't, I wasn't the initial one to do it, but I definitely, once I saw it happen and once I saw the controversy, I was a big proponent of it. And I contributed heavily to making people very angry in it. So for listeners, it's a very popular Facebook group with, I believe, about 45,000 members. It's very, very popular. And it's essentially just for, and it started in the South, which is why you get a lot of this polarizing political discourse in it, because I think it came out of Alabama or something like that, or Georgia.
Surprise.
Yeah, I know. Who would have thunk? And it's basically just a group for showing each other pictures of sandwiches you either made or purchased. And it's basically supposed to be a food porn group. And it's like, hey, look at this. I made this. Here's the ingredients of this. All in good fun. At one point, somebody basically just said, hey, here's my sandwich. Also, Black Lives Matter. This was because it was a thing of shortly after the murder of George Floyd that it was hard to, and you probably experienced this, it was hard to have any conversation that wasn't about, like, that didn't eventually end up being, holy shit, like shit's going down, America is a white supremacist state. We need to defund the police. Like it, that shit was on the on everyone's mind. So naturally, it translates to sandwich groups. And it was interesting because all these people who hence like heretofore had just been talking about sandwiches and stuff. Now, oh boy, we find out that some of them got some real strong opinions about Black Lives Matter and how cops are all good and how, and so like, and the mods were on the right side of history, luckily. So we, you know, you go on a ban phase and just be like, hey, look at this person. They literally said that they called someone a monkey. Like, oh boy, I didn't know this was actually. The thing that I think is interesting about it is it's really, I live in an LA bubble and this was my like window into the real world is this sandwich group. I'm like, oh, this is the hate. This is the hate. And it's all triggered just because somebody said, arrest the cops that murdered Breonna Taylor. But they also had a dope ass turkey sub alongside it. So it's like, you know, but yeah. And so I got into this group and me and my friend Ian Ager and a couple other people. And then you joined it as well, which I've been seeing you pop up in there. I don't know if you've gotten too heavy into throwing down like arguing with people because it can get exhausting to argue with strangers all day, but I've had my days.
Yeah. Some days I'm just like, I got it in me. And some days I'm just like, you're a jerk off.
Yeah, I've resorted to meme dumps now. Like if somebody says some shit, I got this one and maybe I'll send you the picture of it. So maybe you could use it in the promotional artwork or something. But it's basically just a children's book called I Was So Mad. And I just dropped the cover art of that with this like grumpy little rabbit looking guy with his frog friends. And he's just like, I'm angry. And whenever someone's like, wow, I can't believe we're talking about politics again in this fucking sandwich group, I just go, I was so mad. Because that's what it is. That's the rhetoric that's going on there. Like once a week, and I'm sure you've seen this too, you'll see a response where somebody will, on like a post where it's, because people are still doing it, which I love. I love they're still adding progressive shit to their sandwich posts.
Yeah, just did it last week.
Absolutely. And you'll see once a week, someone will go, I thought this was a group for sandwiches. Keep your politics out of here, please. And it's like, okay, so this is no longer your safe space. Oh, it must be tough for you. and like, I used to like actively engage with these people and be like, why are you saying that? Why does it upset you so much to see this? And now I just go, I was so mad.
I love it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, I made cheesesteaks last week because my mom sent me some rolls from Philly.
I got so mad about the comments on that post, by the way.
Yeah, I want to talk about that.
Go ahead.
Okay, so before I even get into this, I don't know if you've ever been to Philly, but there are specific ways that you eat a cheesesteak, okay? Yes. You have your roll, you have your steak, you have your cheese, American or provolone. The only people that get whiz are fucking amateur tourists, right? And then occasionally you'll find some weirdo, you know, but like most of the time it's American or provolone. Sometimes people get fried onions. Sometimes people get raw onions. Sometimes people don't have any onions. Onions are the only acceptable, like basic thing that goes on a cheesesteak. Everything else is an add-on. Okay.
Yes. So like, your building blocks are the things you're talking about right here.
Right. Like that is your basic base there. Now, sure. if you want to add like, fried mushrooms or pepperoni or, you know, whatever else. It's all okay, but those are the things. Now, some people put ketchup on their cheesesteak. Okay. That's a thing.
Yes. No, this was new. This was new. And it was interesting that when I heard about that, I think you told me initially through that post. And then my neighbor had a friend over who's also from Philly and also confirmed that immediately that you could put ketchup. And it never occurred to me before.
Mayo, ketchup.
Absolutely.
I had a friend, he was my old roommate. I used to own a cheesesteak shop, well, pizza shop that had, in Philly, if you own a pizza place, you make cheesesteaks.
You got it. It's like how out here, if you have an Armenian pizzeria, you also make crazy egg boats of bread. Like,
Totally. So like, he told me that I order cheesesteaks like a black guy, which I thought was kind of funny. Because I usually get like mayo, ketchup, pickle.
White people be ordering cheesesteaks like this. Black guys be ordering cheesesteaks like this. I'm a comic.
Right, exactly. Which I thought was really funny. But that's so anyway, so I made these cheesesteaks. Now, first of all, I did not post about what Stuart put on his cheesesteak because that would have burned that group to the ground.
Ooh.
But my just well, hold on, let me tell you this and then I'll tell you that. So mine just had, you know, like we both, like he had provolone, I had American fried onion, and I put on ketchup because that's what I do. I was too lazy to put the mayo on, so I just did ketchup. And it was fine. I post the picture. Most people liked it, except some people were like, who the fuck puts ketchup on a cheesesteak?
Yeah, and I was like,
75% of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So where the fuck are you from? And then somebody else was like, where's the green pepper? And that almost made my brain explode, because out here and anywhere outside of Philly, some people got it in their head that green peppers belong on a cheesesteak.
As
a default. And it kills it.
As a California native, I just assumed that was what you put on cheesesteaks, because that's like whenever I've ever had one, that's what the option is. Like, that's just like, oh, do you want it with cheese and peppers or with onions and peppers or without? Like, it's like those are the two things that they're going to put on regardless. And I'm like, oh, without the peppers, please. But I wouldn't even encourage, I thought that was just how it was done.
No. Well, I mean, you can get it as an add-on, but it's not a default.
Right.
So because if you walked into a cheesesteak place and you were like, I want a cheesesteak, how do you want it? American, fried onion, ketchup. And you walk away.
Or
American wit. You can say wit, and that means fried onion. Who the fuck put? And so then the guy went on and on about it. And then I was like, listen, I don't know who hurt you about with this ketchup. And like, I really like kind of like laid the slap down. He's like, well, you know, you don't have to like get all nasty about it. Like, I was like, just saying, I don't like ketchup. And I was like, well, I didn't respond to that, because then my head would have exploded. But I was just kind of like, well, you just got shitty with me, and that's okay.
Yeah. That's like one of the main, like, in addition to racism, a big thing that happens in that group is, is that people will immediately. So the thing is, show me your sandwich. It's supposed to be, I take it as like, that's interesting, I've never had that. Or, hey, I like that too. Or, huh, that doesn't look like it's for me, but that's interesting. Now it's on my radar.
Right.
But one of the things that, no matter what, and of course, especially when a woman is putting a sandwich in the group, a big bunch of well actuallys will show up and go, you put ketchup on a cheesesteak? Are you out of your fucking mind? Like, I can't even understand this regional difference in preparation of a sandwich. This is fucking nuts. And I just come in, I'm like, dude, what are you, like, chill the fuck out. And you're going to try to flip it around on the, because you're saying, like, he came at you, he made the conscious effort to come at you and be like, what the fuck are you, you fucked up this sandwich. Be like, bro, chill out. It's like, well, why you got to make it about me now, though? It's like, because you
that's exactly what happened. That's exactly.
Psycho.
Yeah. Like, I was just kind of like, what is wrong with, I mean, I get, like, some people have very, like, harsh reactions to certain condiments, and I get it. Like, I used to have a friend that, like, had a huge hatred for mayonnaise.
Sure.
Did not eat mayonnaise.
That group will just, they just trash mayonnaise all the time anyway, too.
I mean, mayo has its place, and mustard has its place.
Absolutely.
And that being said, Stuart, okay, so I made the cheesesteaks, and I said to Stu, hey, would you like some ketchup? And he said, I was actually thinking about mustard and avocado. And I looked at him, and he was like, what? And I was like, well, that's kind of not a thing. And he's like, well, that's what I want to put on my sandwich. And I was like, okay, you put that on your sandwich. That's I'm not going to make you feel bad about it. I'm just saying that, like, you cannot order that when you come to Philly with me. Like,
that is not
a thing you do. I want to live.
Yeah, no, I get that. Oh, I get that 100%. Like, cause I have my strange things where, and it's not really a sandwich based one, but like, I have definitely been like, put ranch on shit that most people don't put ranch on, and they look at me like I'm crazy.
Like,
I'm
what?
Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, I will dip just mozzarella sticks, fried mozzarella sticks in ranch, and people think that's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. But like, it's a thing of like that. It's like, I don't know. Somehow this came into my life, and this is how I like it. But like, the difference there is, to instead of reacting negatively because it challenges your worldview or whatever, like this guy did with your ketchup. Just to be like, huh, that's interesting. Maybe I'll give that a try sometime. Or, huh, that's interesting. Not for me, but, you know, to each their own. Like, somebody posted in that group, you probably saw it, like a very strange vegan sandwich with, like, it had like pumpkin seeds and like vegan cheese and all this stuff. It looked very strange, and I couldn't even wrap my head around the taste palette of it, but I was interested in seeing it. And then, of course, it's a woman and she's vegan, so you know that the men were popping off in the comments. Yeah. And I've been calling that out now when I see that. I just go, huh, look at all these people that are just so excited to tell you why you're wrong about the things you like. Like, good on you, white men. It's really fun to call it out, because instead of like dunking on them and shit, I just want to call it out now and let people know that, like, hey, this is not the monolith. A lot of people out here don't have this issue with what you're doing. We might not be here standing for it. Like, that's my favorite snack too, but I fucking hate these people that are coming after you right now. They suck.
That being said.
That being said, you did come at me for a sandwich in that group once. I don't remember which one it was. You didn't come at me hard, but you said something about the only thing you should have on an Italian sub is this, that, and this, I believe.
Yes.
And yeah.
Yeah, you don't put mustard on an Italian hoagie. That is not a thing that you can do.
That's fair. And this was a small amount of mustard that just added a bit of aftertaste to it, rather than like, oh, I just got a bite of mustard. And that's just how they prepared this specific sub from the place I ordered it from.
Yeah, it was a Jersey Mike's.
It was Firehouse.
Oh, Firehouse. Yeah, sorry.
Firehouse. Yeah, Jersey Mike's gets a little too crazy with the condiments sometimes for me. Yeah. They go a little overboard.
And I apologize. I got a little too excited about that, because it's just it's a weird thing with me with mustard on Italian sandwich.
On
Italian hoagies. A sandwich, you put that mustard on there like a vertical sandwich. Go for
it.
But because I was in Eagle Rock, Anna's, and we went to, there's this great Italian bakery, Eagle Rock Italian Bakery. And she got cookies, and I bought cookies and a sandwich. Like, I bought an Italian sandwich, like a hoagie.
Yeah.
And I said to the kid, extra mayo, which is the way that I always get it. And I did not look at the sandwich before we left, because why would I? Because I fucking ordered it, and you should get it right.
Yeah.
So I took it home, and I put it in the fridge, and I took it out the next day. And Stu's desk is, like, next to the refrigerator.
Right. Okay? I've seen it. Yeah.
So I'm standing at the counter. And he's like next to me, sort of behind me, on my right, sort of behind me. And I open up the sandwich, and it looked good. And I'm really excited. And I picked it up to look at it, and it had a yellow ring around it. And I went,
what the fuck?
But I did it so loud, he spun around and was like, are you okay?
Yeah, like, you thought you cut your hand with like a knife or something, probably while cooking or something like that.
Yeah, and I turned around and I'm like, there's fucking mustard on this sandwich. And he was like, okay. This is not supposed to have mustard on this sandwich. And I've calmed down a little bit, and I was like, sorry, I didn't mean to.
I sound really upset.
And he said, it sounded like when you opened up the sandwich, it wasn't full of meat, but it was full of thumbs.
Oh no, this sandwich is all thumbs. And I don't mean it's clumsy. I mean, it's, I mean, it's actually full of body parts.
Right. So I'm just like so pissed off. And he's just like, I don't understand what the problem is. And I was just like, this is not how you make this sandwich. And I told them to put mayo in it.
Do you think they heard mustard instead of mayo? And like, they were like, oh, you said extra mustard instead of extra mayo. And they're like, that's why it happened, maybe?
No, I actually asked because I asked Brandy Posey about it, because she lives around the corner. She's been there a bunch of times and has had that sandwich.
Yeah.
And she actually went to college in Philly. So she knows how they're supposed to be. And Anna's like, roll, actually said the word first. I was like, can you ask Brandy why they put mustard on the sandwich? And she was like, no. And she would not ask her. So
I simply won't.
Yeah. So I was over there and I was like, hey, I want to ask you about this sandwich. And I see Anna's eyes like rolling all the way in the back of her head. And I was like, I got the Italian sandwich from fucking Eagle Rock, the deli. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, why is there mustard on it? And she went, oh. She's like, I don't know. They do it that way, but I don't know why. And I was like, son of a bitch. Like,
especially enough to have a yellow ring, which you described as a very visceral amount of mustard that I'm sensing. Like a very, very overwhelming amount of mustard.
Yeah. And being a fat ass, of course, I took the sandwich over to the sofa, sitting at the coffee table. And he's like, well, are you going to eat it? And I was like, well, yeah, I'm going to eat it. I'm not going to waste it. But I will complain about it.
Yeah, I'm not above eating this. I'm just mad.
Right. And honestly, it was a tremendous sandwich. I would go back there again, but I would be extremely strict about you. Do not.
Please don't put mustard. Just say you have a mustard allergy and that you will die if they give you mustard. And that's the only way you can like light the fire under their feet on it, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
I will say about the mustard thing on the Italian, when you commented that on my, because that was my first actual post that wasn't me just like commenting on other people's shit.
I'm so sorry.
And I got 900 likes and like 600 comments I had to eventually turn off, because your comment was actually a breath of fresh air, because you were just talking about sandwich shit in a sea of fuck you, race traitor, and like cops are our friends. Because I put that sandwich up with a defund the police sign behind it.
Yeah, that's great.
And so I, like, honestly, someone being like, don't put mustard on that, was like, oh, this is a much more pleasant conversation to have. Despite the fact that I disagree, I'm not being yelled at by a bunch of dudes who are probably named fucking Randall in goddamn Arkansas, who are really mad about their cop uncle, who's a good friend of theirs.
Yeah, Cletus in Mississippi's got his panties in a bunch.
So many dudes named Trey. They got a Fox Racing hat. They got wraparound shades. These are the people that get drunk at the river in Sacramento. I know these people. I grew up around them. They're not good.
It really makes me sad to like see how many people are like that. And I just recently had to unfollow. I couldn't really unfriend her, but I completely unfollowed this girl I went to grade school with.
Sure.
Who posted, and she's always been kind of like, Northeast Philly is kind of known for being pretty racist. But she posted this meme, and it was Aunt Jemima at the top, and it said, lost her job for being black, and at the bottom it was Kamala Harris, and it says, got her nomination for being black. And I was like, no, we're done here.
That's suspect as fuck. Holy shit. Yeah, you can't have that. You can't have that in your feed. That's no good. Like, no. As much as, you know, the free exchange of ideas is important, there's certain people you don't need to keep around in your life.
Yeah.
I had to block somebody early in May or around May, just because they were, you know, came out as a Soros truther. They were like, oh, all these Black Lives Matter protesters are funded by George Soros. I was like, oh, you are a racist. I forgot. And I just blocked him. It was great.
But also
like,
it's crazy.
Definitely a crazy racist. And again, Sacramento trash. That's how they do. You know, the kind of guy that's like, I like craft beer and not progressing in my views on the world. that's kind of the vibe. I run a street sweeping business and shout out to, I'll fucking I'll name him Jeremy Walker. You suck. I don't care. I don't give a fuck.
Oh man. All right. So I know you got stuff to do today. So I just want
to, you have to go back to work technically.
Yeah, you do have to go back to work.
At some point, you know, I'm going to shower too, but who knows?
So what are some of your favorite like secret spots to go and eat in LA?
Food spots?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to drop some Valley knowledge right now. I don't have a whole lot at the top of my head, but I'm going to talk about like local fucking dope ass, like delivery food. And then I'm talking about my favorite restaurant ever in LA.
Okay.
Right now I'm doing a thing. I've been at least once a week, I've been ordering hot chicken sliders from Dave's Hot Chicken in NoHo. And I think there's maybe two or three locations total of this place, but probably the best. I don't know how well versed you are in hot chicken in general as a concept, but it's my favorite thing right now. And I order from it once a week and have fire shits. It's great.
Have you ordered from Cluckin' Chicken?
Yes, they are also, that's on my list as well. I would say Dave's is top tier, Cluckin' Chicken, just a quick second. And then there's a couple other below that.
Because they do that thing where it's like French fries and then coleslaw.
The bed of fries with the slaw and the pickles. Because with a good hot chicken slider, usually I get cheese on it. Some purists don't, but I fucking love cheese. So I'll put you get a slice of cheese, a couple pickles, coleslaw, and then just the chicken. And that's it, just the bird. And that's very much boiled down to its essence, and it's great. And I've worked my way up to being occasionally bold enough to go with extra spicy, which means I've hallucinated from chicken about as much as I've hallucinated from acid in quarantine. Yeah, so Dave's and Cluckin's very good too. Dave's Hot Chicken though is, I highly recommend that. They probably Postmates where you're at.
I think so.
Burbank, yeah.
Yeah, Burbank, the Burbank.
Oh, and you're also by Ike's Sandwiches, which I don't know how familiar you are with Ike's, but.
I had Ike's when I was working on MasterChef, we got lunch from there once.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a little bit, since I've moved, they are no longer within Postmates distance. So I actually haven't had I haven't had Ike's in a while. But I used to get the Jim Rome over there, which is like a pesto, turkey, avocado, like Californian mess. But I love it. It's so decadent.
Yeah, their sandwiches are a total mess, but like very good.
They got that Dutch crunch bread.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You know, what I found out about the Dutch crunch is that it doesn't travel all that well.
No, that's the thing. You got to kind of go. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You got to be there to really to get why it's the best.
Yeah.
So yeah, Ike's is up there. Since we're talking sandwiches, we definitely got to not mention Ike's. That's for sure. And then I actually bougied it up because I got a job. And I was like, oh, I got a paycheck. I can actually like drop some money on really expensive shit right now. Like just like have a night in to myself. I ordered, this is a place I've been to like 4 times in person. And over the years I've lived in the Valley, but Sugarfish in Studio City is the best sushi I've ever had in my life, hands down.
I've been to the Sugarfish downtown. I went.
Okay. Yeah. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Then. Yeah. I used to come out here to just like to do shows and I'd stay with my friend Sean.
Right. Right.
And he started dating this girl, Sarah, who he eventually married, and she's delightful. And one day, and she's a lawyer. And one day she was like, hey, I'm going to lunch at this sushi place with my friend. Do you want to come? And I was like, sure. And it was the Sugarfish downtown.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's still there. I don't know, but it's a lot.
I think there's another one out there still. Yeah. I go to the Studio City one, but yeah.
But man, yeah, that is some top notch fucking sushi.
It's bare bones. It's absolutely just incredibly prime cuts of fish with incredibly good, well-cooked rice with like, it comes to you when you're eating in the restaurant, they go, do not put soy sauce on this. Do not put ponzu on it. We'll do everything exactly how it's supposed to be. And some people get suspect by that. They're like, but I like to eat the way I like to eat. And I'm like, I get that. But honestly, just trust them on this. Like, just try it and tell me if I'm wrong. And then if I'm wrong, then go ahead and dump soy sauce on it or whatever. Because it's absolutely the most incredible sushi I've ever had. And that's why I was very suspect about ordering from them. Because I was like, how is this going to work delivery wise? Like, I don't know if you've ordered from them before. They give you a whole to-do box with everything separated, with every single thing that they put on, with instructions of what goes on what and when you should do it. And like, they don't fuck around. They're like, no, if we're going to deliver this to you, we're going to tell you how you should do it. Wow. And I got that, and you open it up and it's like you have a little tray in front of you, and the box lid is like the visual guide for how to eat what's in the box. So you got your sashimi over here, and then you got your hand rolls over here, and then you got your, like, you know, it's crazy. It's definitely not something you can indulge in a lot because it's kind of pricey, but it's very good.
That's what I was gonna say. Like, if I didn't know that the sushi was so good, I'd be like, how bougie, but like, you know what, I've had it and it's good.
It's kind of like, you ever see Hero Dreams of Sushi, that documentary about
I haven't.
Oh, I think it's on Hulu right now. It's anyway, basically, like, the only thing I was bringing it up for is like, really intense sushi chefs are like that. That's just how they are. Like, the best sushi chefs are like, they barely let you order. They're like, you're going to just eat what I give you today and it's going to be great. And it's going to be 15 minutes like tops, you know, it's going to be a quick meal and you're going to absolutely love what I do and don't question me. And it's crazy for sure. But I think some of the best chefs in general have to be kind of nuts like that.
I think most chefs feel that way, but only sushi chefs have enough balls to say it, because I used to have that pierogi business, and like, people would tell me, you know, oh, I put this on my pierogies, I put that on my pierogies. I'm like, you know what you should put on your pierogies? And they're like, what? I'm like, you fry them in fuck of butter. If you want to throw some onion in there, throw some onion in there, have a little sour cream on the side, and that's all you need.
Yeah.
Like, people, like, they're like, oh, well, I cover it in salt or like whatever. Yeah, and I'm like, no, this is all seasoned. You don't need to do that.
In college, I worked at a Subway when I was 20. And like, I know that's trash, but I'm saying like people's specific things, I would get very sad for them sometimes. Like, some people would want me to burn their bread. Like, they'd be like, can you double cook it when you toast it? I'm like, so it's like charred and not bread anymore? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, technically I can do that. I don't have a lot of autonomy here at Subway. I'm basically a minimum wage fucking stepping stone, but okay. And I would like do it, and I would give them this like fucked up sandwich. I'm like, that's what you wanted. All right.
And they were happy with that?
That's what they wanted. That's what they said. Wow. Can you literally burn it? I've had them go burn it more. Like, I want it more. I would be like, I'll give it for another 10 seconds or something. Maybe you want it a little crispy. They're like, no, burn the shit out of it. Like, all right, sure, whatever. And I think that's why, like, when we're talking about like these chefs or people that like really want you to experience their food the best way, it's why tasting menus, like, chefs are like, no, this is what we have today, like it or leave it. Like, we're going to give it to you this way. And And just that's why that's at Sugarfish. They literally call their daily menus the Trust Me and the Trust Me Light, like, and then the Trust Me Plus. It's like literally those are the three things you can order, and then you can go a la carte if you want. But you can get a Trust Me, which is like, we'll bring you what you need. Don't worry about it. Let's just say the thing and we'll get you.
Nice. So yeah.
I'm so hungry now. Holy shit.
Yeah, me too. Favorite taco truck?
I don't have a favorite taco truck. I will say, there's a good taco truck on my corner here on Lancashire and Victory. I just gave out my address, basically. Well, I near Lancashire and Victory.
Sorry, no one listens. That's fine.
Just bleep it out. Just bleep it out. One of my favorite places is actually kind of over in your neck of the woods. It's Los Amigos is a very good Mexican eatery that has incredible tacos and burritos. I don't do food trucks. That's not one of my LA go-tos. I don't know why. I just something about like eating something on the street. Like I don't, especially like, you know, on the dirty North Hollywood streets. I'm just like, I'd rather like eat this in my house or at a restaurant or like indoors somewhere. I guess I'm bougie like that, but
I usually would end up just like hitting taco trucks and taking it home.
Oh yeah, no, totally. And I would do it at work when I worked at Fox, like at the Fox Plaza. They would have trucks come to like our like, you know, circle driveway thing for the front of the building. So on my lunch breaks, for sure, I would go to the trucks, bring it back up to the office and eat it there in like the break room or whatever, or eat it out under the patio. But like when I see people with like, they're sitting on like four plastic chairs, just like on the sidewalk eating like a meal, I'm like, that seems, I don't know. I like to be a little more comfortable when I'm absorbing food.
Yeah, I can see that, especially because like, North Hollywood's kind of gross.
So. Yeah, like it's like I'm talking about like specifically like places in front of like the Good Night, you know, like that bar. Yeah, like that's I've seen whenever there's a truck there, I'm like, word, but also there's a lot of roaches around here.
Yeah, when they set up the table outside.
Yeah, like a little flimsy like picnic table kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like cooking on the table, and I'm kind of like, I have to really not think about this or I'm not going to be able to eat it.
But I realize I am also a hypocrite because if I'm drunk and especially when I was back in my raver days, I'm drunk and I get out of a show at 2 a.m. and there's somebody with a fucking hot dog cart out there, like frying up bacon wrapped dogs. Oh, I'm like 100% all over that. So like, I am a hypocrite. I think it's just when I'm sober, it doesn't matter, or it matters. And when I'm drunk, I don't give a shit.
Well, I remember one time I did a show at the Good Night and like, I didn't eat before I left and the show was like really long.
Yeah.
And then, there was somebody outside like cooking food and I had no cash on me and they do not have an ATM.
Right. Like, can I Venmo somebody? Like, oh my God.
Yeah. I really contemplated like running to the 7-Eleven to like get money.
You got to, sometimes you got to do that.
I've been
in that situation before. And cause I'm like terrible about scheduling my meals. Like right now, as we're recording this, it's about 2 p.m. and I haven't eaten today. it's just like how I just live my life where like I let it hit critical mass of hunger. And then I like just fucking binge. Like I'm probably, after all this conversation, I'm probably going to order hot chicken after this podcast. Oh. I'm just like, I think I need it now.
I'm not going to lie. Like I really miss the cluckin' chicken and possibly because when I used to live in Sherman Oaks, my roommate that was on the lease was like a lunatic.
She
was also from Alabama.
Right.
And she's the one that told me about the Cluckin' Chicken place. And I thought in my head, I know she's crazy, but she's also from the South.
Right. So she knows what's up.
Yeah. And she would order from there like once or twice a week.
It's really good.
And it was,
If you're outside, I would check Postmates or Grubhub or whatever to see, but I would check and see if you're still within distance to try out Dave's, because Dave's is definitely a no-ho thing, but you might be within delivery reach of it, and I would definitely recommend it.
I heard when they opened, they weren't really all that great, but like the one in no-ho, like the Lancashire one, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I said to people, I'm like, never order from a restaurant for the first month.
Right. Give it some time.
Give it some time. They're working out their kinks. People are quitting. They're figuring everything out. So.
Sure, absolutely.
But is it like super, super hot? Because I'll tell you something. I had the Hattie B's super hot chicken in Atlanta. And it was so hot. I was texting Anna and I was like, it's been 3 hours and my face is still on fire.
Yep. I mean, you can get that level if you want, but they'll do it however way you want it. Like they go mild, medium, hot, and extra hot. I usually just go with the hot. I don't go extra hot.
I mean, medium is...
Unless I want to see God in my sweat.
Medium is fine. I don't really like Ring of Fire anymore. I'm too old for that.
yeah. Yeah, there's something like, oh, like there's a weird flex to spice sometimes where people are like, have you had this fucking pepper? It's the hottest shit ever. It'll make you lose your mind. It's like, nah, dude, like I like it. And then like, if that's actually what you like, then go ahead. But I feel like a lot of people just do it because it's like a beta way to be like, how much you bench, bro. It's like,
right,
beta males be like, oh, I benched fucking 350,000 Scoville units.
I'll tell you, that's why, you've had Dave Yates' hot sauce, yeah? Or no?
I don't think I have. You've told me about it, but I haven't.
Yeah, you should order a bottle of hahahotsauce.com, one of our sponsors.
Hey, nice plug.
Yeah. But he uses the Carolina Reaper pepper.
Right.
Which is a pretty hot pepper, but he also puts like fruit in it. So like it's hot, but it rounds out. So
yeah,
like,
it takes the edge off.
Yeah, it's great. Like you can put it on everything. And I'm not saying that as a commercial. I'm saying it as like we actually put it on everything.
Totally. Yeah. But not an Italian hoagie, because that's not how we do it in Philly.
I mean, you could if you wanted to. So, okay. So last question. Okay. Yes. What's your favorite thing to cook during quarantine?
Well, I barely cook. I don't know. Like, I have ordered what I like to do, because I'm not much of a chef. I used to do like, you know, HelloFresh and stuff like that, where they bring you ingredients and then you cook at home and stuff, or like this and that. I've been like, I like to order or buy stuff from like places that will give you all the parts of something really dope that they've already like cooked, and you just assemble it and reheat, like recook it at home and stuff. Like you go pick up the ingredients and do that. Like Ring of Fryer, speaking of which, Ring of Fryer with our friends, Chris Crittenden and Cindy Aravina out there in Canoga Park have been doing that. And what they'll do is they'll give you like the ingredients of shit, because Chris is an amazing chef and he'll like make amazing pulled pork, but then he'll give it to you in a capacity where you take it home and make it fresh at home. So that's the thing. That's kind of the thing I've been doing to get by, is stuff like that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Ring, yeah, because I Ring of Fryer. That's also not a sponsor, but I would just give them a shout out just because they're comedians and they're also great chefs. My cooking skills. Like I can cook, but I've also been horrifically depressed. I haven't been indulging. I've mostly been sampling local cuisine and eating, like, you know, just putting like throwing like meager pasta dishes together of like, you know, shrimp Alfredo or whatever it is, you know, shrimp linguine Alfredo. And it's like, whatever. I mostly, because I'm working all the time and also doing my podcast, I'm just like, just give me your food. Fuck it. Just I'll buy your shit. I have time and money to do this. Let's do it.
I mean, if you got the time and the money, I say go for it. I'm just
exactly.
Poor. I'm poor. So like, I just like cook. Like,
last night, that's smart. That's good.
I did a pork loin in the crock pot last night. 7 hours delicious. In the crock pot, baby, on low.
Oof. That does sound good. I do miss a good like home cooked like side, like something that you like did from front to back, like chunk of beef or meat. It's great.
Yeah.
Like a fucking slab of steak or something. Oh, I wonder if Musso and Frank's delivers. There's no way.
The very first time I came out here, I went to Musso and Frank's by myself for lunch. And
nice.
I got a ribeye and a baked potato.
Oh, it's so good.
And a highball.
Yeah, like that's welcome to LA. That's old Hollywood. It's the oldest restaurant in Hollywood.
And I hope it lives forever. And if it ever goes out of business, I will fucking die, because it's delicious.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel that.
Yeah. So, all right, Kev. Well, thanks for sitting down and talking to me about this. You want to tell the kids at home where they can find you on the internet?
Sure. Yeah. If people like the sound of my voice, they can listen to my podcast, Bleak and Review, every Friday on the Unpops Podcast Network. It's basically a show where I yell about current events and talk with comedians, kind of in this regard. Nicole, you were just on an episode. They can go listen to that one for information on that. And also, you know, I throw sketches and audio plays and stuff like that, little dumb bits of stuff like that every week. And so you can go listen to that, Bleak and Review. You can follow it at Bleak Pod on Twitter. You can follow me at KB Anderson, yo. And I have some other stuff coming out on the Bleak and Review Patreon soon that I can hype. So if you're interested in paying money to hear more content, you can go to patreon.com/bleakandreview and give me $5 and I'll give you some stuff. I donate all the Patreon stuff to Act Blue causes for Black trans people. So if you want to feel good about a Patreon donation, but don't want to do any work in researching a charity on your own, which I understand, I'm doing it. So go ahead and do that.
That's awesome. Well, thanks so much, Kat, for sitting down. And I know you don't know where to call you Kat.
We're all getting the KA-47 over here.
The K-47 and Weenie in the Bun in the morning. There you go. So thanks for sitting down. And hey, did you eat?
I'm about to.
Excellent. Awesome. Excellent.
All right. That was Kevin Anderson. Thanks again, Kev, for sitting down and talking. You can check out his podcast, Bleak in Review. It's a weekly podcast he does. Check it out. It's a lot of fun. You can check him out, Kevin Anderson Yo, on the Twitters. And you can check me out, of course, on Digia_eat on Instagram. And also Yatesy75 is my personal thing on Instagram and Twitter and everywhere else. And you can check out my website, yatesycomedy.com. If you want to buy a bottle of hot sauce, please buy a bottle of hot sauce. Support a small business, hahahotsauce.com. Tune in next week to see what our next guest is for episode 37. And everybody, please stay in the house. Wear a mask. Don't be a jerk. And hey, did you eat?